With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. We're having some technical difficulties, which but it's Tuesday, May 21. It's around 10 o'clock in the morning. Tuesday, so that means Richard Narog, co-host of the show, is on the show. And so am I. And my name is Cezzy Harris, and this is Westchester on the Level. And because Richard's on, I'm going to make sure that I get everything in. So in case you want to give us a call, the phone number is 347-205-9201. And the number again, 347-205-9201. So, Mr. Narog, good morning.
And good morning to you, Mr. Harris, and to all our wonderful listeners who take the time to listen to us live here on certainly on the Tuesday morning that I'm with you on these weekly conversations from 10 to 11, and also to those who listen in by archive and catch us later, and thank them for it. They take their time to listen to you and me talk about things here primarily in the city of Yonkers, but we certainly move on to neighboring communities, the county of Westchester, the state of New York, our wonderful country. And we go international when we need to. So we cover it all. We give our opinions. We do some educating. We keep track of things. We try to keep things on the level, which is an excellent, excellent title for the show, because that's what it is, just keeping things on the level, keeping the balance. So, and what we normally do when we keep the balance, at least we've done this for the last number of weeks and months, is talk about you, me, and the IG, about Ms. Titley-Colville, who's the Inspector General for the City of Yonkers, and how things stand with her, things that we've brought to her attention and others have brought to her attention, and the results thereof, which has been pretty positive. Would you agree?
I think so. I still find her somehow restrained by the administration, and I would hope that they would just let her, you know, gain her own freedom and wings to do more, because I find her very savvy, very intuitive, and also very, very thorough. So I like her work. I she would name more names today.
Yes, so people who have dealt with her have reported as such say the same thing as you, and they're all good reports. They find her straight up, attentive. She follows up, but she listens.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely pays attention, and she shows the interest and professionalism that we've always asked for and we've come to expect from our government people. In this case, she's, of course, new to Yonkers, came in with the Spano administration. So when you can hear that in the city of Yonkers and you can pass that as the inspector general, that's a good thing. So I would agree with you on your personal knowledge and mine on more the second half of second hand, if you will. But nevertheless, listening to people who have indeed met and dealt with her. So.
Well, I do find
we hope for great things, because, like you said, she probably needs to expand her wings, and you can probably only do as much as your budget allows and the staff that you have. And there's not much staff, and there's not much budget there. So if you really want to have the IG's office do the right thing, you have to fund them.
That's very true, and that's one of the problems. The funding is everything, and unfortunately, it does essentially put the inspector general, even though they usually exceed the term of the mayor, under the mayor's thumb through a budgeting situation. That should be a given, and should not be able to be tampered with.
Well, therein lies the difficulty, as you know. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Inspector General is not an independent office as such, because it is funded through the executive budget, and the hiring comes the same way. So the only way you get the true independence of an individual is through an elected office.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll ever get there. It just doesn't seem that I have confronted any administration in the past, or even this one, the present one, where they feel comfortable enough to let the people really do the work, if they would be allowed to do the work, in a professional way. There's evidently a sense that I get that this administration needs tremendous control, and it just is what it is. It's not there's no freedom to do the right work, and that shouldn't mean that people are left alone and with no oversight. Yes, Mr. Kakase, he evidently came in, knew everything about computers and computer systems and integration and different technologies, and was able to immediately save the city a fortune of money, about $140,000 a month. And that was only the beginning. So, you know, there needs to be oversight, but I think we need to let the people who do the work do it.
Yeah, micromanaging never bodes well for the end result.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's all management style, and, you know, it's what school you sort of follow. And if it's the one that says you have to know every minute of the day, everything that's going on, you'll burn yourself out and get nowhere. But if you take a broader approach and say, let me hire the best people, the right people, the knowledgeable people, the experienced people, give them the authority, make them responsible and accountable, and let them go do their thing, and hold those people to task.
Yeah,
and that'll.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No. What is it? That's what's so true. You know what? I guess I have to give the mayor a little bit of room here, because basically, you know, he comes out of the assembly as the new state member. Not much of a staff, not really much to run. It could be very micromanaged if one wanted, but I never got the impression that Mr. Spano was a micromanager. I thought that a lot of his staff would be able to function on their own, with, of course, his oversight and direction. But I don't see that's happening in the city, and maybe that's because the size of the city is such that it escapes people's concept of how large it really is. And we don't have the upper management teams, including the support teams for the mayor, that are have gotten the experience on that plane. You know, they're not big operations. You know, and this is a billion-dollar corporation with unbelievable responsibility for 200,000 people. It's not crazy. Did I lose you?
Uh-oh, I thought for a minute you did. You were cutting out, and then I said, uh-oh.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. Yeah, you're on your explanation about the management, which is very true. You know, you're the third largest city in the state of New York with 200,000 people, and things are manageable. There's no question. It just takes the right people and an understanding and the experience. I mean, do you manage from your office? I mean, do you manage from just talking to other people? Do you manage by walking around? That's a famous school of management where you walk around, and I don't mean just in the building, but do you have a sense of the city, and how many people in the city have a sense of the city and know the city overall, and in particularly their neighborhoods and various geographic areas, and who can, you know, be sensitive to things and understand what's going on, understand the nuances, and understand what's out there and appreciate, you know, the community they're in? Or are they just travelers through time who are temporarily parked here, or people who are here but not really here? So, you know, it's about having roots and understanding of the community at this level, because Yonkers is the biggest small neighborhood you'll find.
Well, in a sense, when you brought up the Inspector General, Kitley Colville, I appreciate her depth of investigation, so that she doesn't seem to miss out on that personal relationship between people, as well as familial ties. So it doesn't escape her. She's no fool, but that empathy stands well for her, whether she stays here, and I hope she does, and given more freedom, so that she can do the job that she's capable of doing. I mean, it's evident. We just need to let her go. Let her do the work.
She has to feel comfortable in doing whatever she has to do, and I hope she does. And
yeah.
She needs to have, you know, sustainable funding, if you will, and staff to do what has to be done in a city this big. And those are some of the constraints. So I understand. It's like the plane is geared up and ready to go, but the hangar doors aren't open, you know?
Exactly. Well, you know, I guess overall, it's what I find difficult to comprehend, and I guess this is foolish of me, is that, you know, in this particular administration, I find they've been focused more on hiring their own rather than dealing with the issues of the city, and that there's so much on the plate. And interestingly, remember we used to hear, oh, I don't want to blame anybody in the past. Now all of a sudden things have started to change, where they realized they were way over their head. We said it from day one, even before they got into office, and we've been right, because you can't micromanage the city the way they're trying to do, and you can't embellish it with inept fools that get hired because they're friends of the administration, because they're not creating anything.
You spend more time catching them, watching them, covering for them,
yes,
and having other people have resentment for picking up the load for the very people that you keep piling on, that you tell us that we can't afford to have to begin with.
Well, that's so true. And, it's unfortunate, but I don't expect the finance commissioner, Mr. Lazuski, to ever give us a tally of what's going on. And to his discredit, because I guess he should be capable of doing this, but again, it was never done in the past, and I've learned more and more that it's really about the parties, it's about the agenda, has nothing to do with the public interest, and no matter how much last week or so has exposed the mayor for being, you know, very, very much partisan for himself. And it's not been an inclusive situation for the city. And that doesn't work. And it's very disappointing, because I expected more from him.
Well, look, we are nearly a year and a half into this administration.
I'm ready to bark.
What do we have to show at this point? If we have things to show, what is it we have to show?
Yeah, well, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I see the place getting packed with rubber stamps all over the place. And it doesn't quite cut it.
And that's across the board, whether it's Yonkers or any place else, but you hate to think of government as that old game show, Bob Barker's Let's Make a Deal, you know?
But it is.
Is that all it's about, or do we actually have, some theories
as to... What's it all about? It's what
go
it's all about.
What's the plan? What's the vision? How do we get to that point? You know, I mean, these were troops that were supposed to have hit the ground running. We know they hit the ground, but where are they running? Are they running in place? Are they running forward? Have they made some progress? What exactly has happened? I mean,
they're not running.
Look at some of the simpler things or the easier things, and then you have to scratch your head. You wonder about the decision making. It's just
They're not running. They're not focused. They don't care to have a vision. They don't have a vision. They're stuck in the quagmire of their own making by not putting responsibility in the back of the past administration. Got away with murder and extortion of funds from the city coffers, you know, to cover their rear. And, you know, it sounds like maybe, well, it doesn't matter how it sounds. The bottom line is this is the truth, and the truth is that the city doesn't want to hear it. And, you know, yesterday, for example, there was a meeting. The big issue was that at midday, between 2:30 and 3:05, we got people from the Teamsters Union and had the desk show up and half-pack the city council with scripted lines that they couldn't even read for whatever reason. Maybe it wasn't written large enough to see. Weren't able to read the words that were in there, and the minute it's over, they leave. This is not discourse. This is packing the room for an agenda, and it's a joke. 4 hours doing nothing.
And the agenda was the redistricting.
Yeah, which should have been finished a long time ago. But yet, no. The redistricting was meant to happen like this, and it's not so much on the side of Chuck Lesnik or Mayor Mike Spano. It is what they intended to do, which is miss the deadline, because if you don't have a defined, delineated, redistricted map 30 days before signature petitions.
Yeah, the gathering of signatures for elective office.
So then you don't have a new redistricted map. You have to use the map that was from 3 years ago, because we usually do every second or we conduct a change every 10 years. It's on the
every
third.
10 years. Yeah, with this population shift, with the census.
Yeah, but it's within the third year. We don't do it on the 10th year, but we do it 10 years after our last redistricting, 1993, 1983, 2003, 2013. And so that's how it works for the cities. And I think the counties do it a year before. So they do it on the second year of a decade. So the bottom line is we're back to square one. And who does that serve? Just the mayor who played a game, you know, to make believe that he was bipartisan. And let's face it, at the end of the day, not that I care, because it doesn't matter to me. It's really a Spano party. He makes believe he's a Republican. He makes believe he's a Democrat. At the end, he serves himself. And he serves his friend and family network. And it didn't work with Amicone, didn't work with Spencer, didn't work with Angela Martinelli, and it's not going to work with this one until these people, all of them, get kicked out the door and the feds will be on their back. And they don't realize it, but it's going to happen. Jail is in their future. That's the vision for the Yonkers. And it's got to stop. And you know, I'm not getting all bent out of shape about it. I just don't see the point of it all. What are we doing? You know, haven't done the budget. When are we going to do that?
You know, as you say many times, you have to advertise the good you do. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't. I was going to ask you about that.
I said, as you've said many times, you have to advertise the good you do. What is it that you are doing? Where is it you're going? Where is it you want to take the residents of the city of Yonkers? What's your plan?
Well, you know, I agree with that. I used to grow
up. Maybe there is a plan, but maybe we're looking at the plan from the general population. Maybe there's another plan. Maybe there's the developer plan. Maybe there's the make money plan. Maybe there's the job plan. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
maybe the plan is condensed. Maybe the plan is so condensed that it's only a small circle.
Well, you know, all I see is...
Oh, for whose benefit? That's the question you ask.
Well, that's really what it boils down to, like economic development. Is there a plan? I don't see the plan. Have you seen
the
plan?
Well, you know something? There's a... on the television station, on the cable channel, there's one of the programs the City Hall is running is called IDA Scholarships.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me. Why would the Industrial Development Agency be giving out scholarships? What business is it for them to be involved in scholarships? Other than to have this program started a number of years ago, whereby you induce a company to come in, offer them benefits, and then part of the arrangement is to sort of branch off from there and say, why don't you give scholarships to the school kids? So what do we have? We have a company that comes in that gets... tax abatements and sales taxes and this tax and that tax, property tax. So we get abatements, which are subsidies by the taxpayers. Then we get the company to funnel money to the school system through the IDA, no less. And we get that acknowledgement by the particular company. Good publicity, free publicity, wonderful publicity. And then the company also gets a write-off on that money, which would probably be money that should be going to the taxes they should be paying normally. So it's a game here, and it makes no sense. These are things that shouldn't happen or should stop by now. And this is what has to be addressed. This is what has to be looked at, because what is an industrial development agency doing involved in scholarships?
Well, I remember I came on the scene about that time, a little bit before that deal was brought forward. And at that time, I was totally unaware of what an IDA was or things like that. And then I learned that here was the Pritzker family, the owners of Hyatt Hospitality Group, the number one group in the world. Number one. I forgot the name, but I think they changed it now to WII. It's an assisted living place, very risky.
Yes.
So the bottom line was at that time Ed Sheeran was involved, and he worked out an agreement which was part of the inducement for them to come in. Mind you, nobody needs an inducement to get in at the border of Riverdale, which had an older population than Yonkers at the time when they were building. And so Riverdale was aging faster, had an older population, and here they would be able to have this facility near their home, near their kids, blah, 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 and they would do well. And Ed Sheeran worked out a deal for the next, I think it was 20 years, he asked that the Pritzker family, the Hyatt people, would give $150,000 a year of, I think it was $10,000scholarships to the, I guess, the 15 best in the city. And that was what they gave. And they gave it in their name, not in the city's name. So they never gave it to the city. They gave it as a nation directly from them. They took a tax write-off, which means the taxpayer paid for that scholarship as well.
Uh-huh.
No benefit, no promotion of anything with the city. They've never done anything in the city. No advertising, no promotion, no anything. They've not done a thing for this city. And then we make believe that, oh, we needed to induce them. You know what? To open up near the Hebrew home? Or the college,
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right on the border of New York City and Mount St. Vincent. I mean, these are no-brainers. This is all political theater. This is all diversion as well. And you're not supposed to look beyond the curtain. And these are the things that need to be addressed.
And every year they make a big deal of this as if out of their magnanimous hearts they would do this. And I'm disgusted. I don't even mention them anymore. I've been mentioning it for years, and nobody wants to listen to it. Hey, you know, we're going to be losing, what's his name, Mike, no, what's his last name?
What are you referring to?
There's somebody on the IDA who's leaving. I think his term is expiring.
Oh, Barada? Mike Barada?
Barada. Mike Barada. He's leaving soon. So who knows who they're likely to be. And we'll see how they go with that one. But I'm sure, knowing this administration and knowing what they're doing, that this is another setup. But I'll find out, because I only found out last week that Barada was leaving. You know, it's like everything is supposed to be hush hush. Nobody should know. I don't know. I don't get it anymore. But I do get it, but I'm still in shock.
You're going to need shock therapy pretty soon. We're going to have a commercial.
Oh, well, speaking of commercials, perfect time. It is the last night to see that show at the Westchester Broadway Theater about the Belmonts. So if you don't mind, we'll listen to that, and then we'll catch a few more later on. We'll be right back with Richard Narod.
Hey, doo-wop lovers, mark this down on your calendar. On Tuesday night, May 21st, the Westchester Broadway Theater presents an incredible night of doo-wop music with one of the original groups that started it all back in the late 50s, the doo-wop Hall of Famers, the Belmonts. An amazing night where you can enjoy some of the greatest doo-wop music ever recorded by the group that put Belmont Avenue in the Bronx on the American music map. You'll relive all the Belmont's biggest hits like Run Around Sue, Tell Me Why, A Teenager in Love, In the Still of the Night, and so many more. The timeless classics that put these Bronx legends into the Doo-Wop Hall of Fame. And don't forget, before the show, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees. All for one low price, and the parking is free. Order your tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Be there to enjoy the smooth harmonies and unforgettable hits of the Doo-Wop Hall of Famers, the Belmonts. Tuesday, May 21st at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back with Richard Narod and Hezzy Harris on Westchester on the Level. And if you want to join us in conversation, the phone number to call, 347-205-9201. You know, it's just impressive about all the illness in the past in Yonkers. I guess I would be a little bit more light about it and a little bit more positive about it if I saw conduct becoming an administration of the third largest city in the state that would do well. And the grim and the doom and gloom that we hear the mayor espouse when he speaks to Albany is completely different, anathema to the stuff that we the showmanship that's done over here. The ribbon cutting is done here, and the crying goes up in Albany, and we're not supposed to know about it. And that's
there's an analogy to be made that Albany's a backed up sewer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
Just go right up the thruway to Albany, and that sewer is so backed up it needs to be flushed out. They're still worrying whether Shelley Silver should be the majority leader. Can you imagine?
Well, I certainly can.
Speaker of the Assembly, can you imagine? I mean, it's just, and you wonder why people are disgusted and they don't want to vote and they hate politicians and they don't want to be bothered and be in the process. I mean, these are no-brainers. These are easy.
No, they're not. Because when it comes to Shelley Silver, who I think is a despicable man, and his behavior shows it, In fact, I think we were one of the first to come out and demand his resignation when that Lopez-Gropez spent $100 million. They have a slush fund for this sort of stuff. Think about it. You know, I mean, can you see women getting together and creating a slush fund for this sort of conduct? I don't. It's not civil. Maybe there.
Let me ask you: Where are the women's groups? Where are the women's groups? Where are all these people that run to microphones, or that the news will run with a microphone to them? Where are they on this issue? None to be heard. Why?
Took them too long to come out. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And you know what?
Well, when you don't get it, you know politics are involved. And when politics are involved, it's the political philosophy that's involved. And the people who are involved with handing out the monies and supporting their causes, and they all of a sudden become mute.
Well, certainly his district must be so thrilled with him, not because of what he does, but the most important thing that he does with in the money. You know, this is an extremely wealthy man. You know, Weitz and Luxembourg, that's his firm. He's making a fortune of money. And he's been used to operate. It's a little bit too much. It's a little bit too much because he's not an ethical man, and yet he has an ethical history. His DNA, I think he's got rabbis in the family. I'm telling you, I'm ashamed and embarrassed. I'm just ashamed and embarrassed. What's wrong with these people? How dare he do this? I mean, is it written in the Bible anywhere, this expected behavior? No. And what did he forget? A dollar bill gets smack him in the face and he doesn't know what to do now? Or is it that all these guys are just like old men who just, you know, what do they call them, old guys, you know, weird, whatever, sleazy dudes, whatever. I don't know what the hell's going on.
And you recall how they went after Senator Bruno in the Senate, the Republican. How come? What makes this any different?
Well,
all these conflicts of interest, all these connections, all this use of taxpayer money to for payoffs. What's this all about?
Well, I don't think it's a Republican a Democrat divide. It's a question of how much power you wield up there and if you can get away with it. And you know what? You have to know your place. And evidently, Bruno thought he could do more than he really could. And maybe the tide was he was a vindictive man. I remember Bruno said that when the city of Yonkers didn't elect Nick Spano, after Bruno came down here and wanted to give money to the city for their economic development, he basically said, screw them, because they didn't vote the way I wanted them to vote. I mean, the hell is he to do that?
And you know something? That's probably no different than when there was an attempted coup d'etat against Shelley Silver, and I think Samuel Dombrowski was involved in that many years ago. And all those who were participants, the coup failed, and they were relegated to smaller basement offices with no windows. That's the way they do it. This is how government runs. It's run like it's a private corporation for the people who are in charge, and they're allowed to get away with it by their colleagues. So they're all to blame in that regard, because nobody speaks up.
Well, that's, you know, you hit on the whole issue, and it's that sort of conduct that the elected officials, elected with the best of heart and intention by the voter, is permitted this sort of conduct, and the media is not permitted to see any of this, or God forbid to report it, because those are the ones that are being shunned, and the reporting is such that most mediocre media will just simply say, well, you know, this didn't matter. They overlook a lot of issues. And the point is, you can't overlook anything.
Well, you're overlooking them because generally you find there are conflicts of interest.
Yes.
they're tied in one way or another. Their relative has a job, their spouse has a job, someone gives them this, the other person gives them that. They won't answer their phone calls if they do this. You know how that goes.
Well,
you can already visualize the statue of Shelley in Albany, or at least a large bust. And think about the revolutions you've seen around the world, all right? Especially in Eastern Europe, that might bring to mind more the vision,
mm-hmm.
where just about at the end of the revolution, or certainly after the person was toppled, they're throwing up hooks into these things and pulling down these statues. Well, you could see now that the hooks are in Shelley, and they're looking to pull down that bust or that statue of him.
Right.
And it's they're almost there. They're almost there. But it's amazing the clout that he has over the members who actually elect him. This is the irony of the whole situation. And what would that mean? What would that mean? Not that's that he would step down as the speaker, but he would just go back to being the normal assemblyman from Manhattan. Which,
correct.
What a killer that would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because you won't be able to bring home the bacon.
He won't be able to bring home the bacon, and then the revenge starts politically, internally.
Correct.
Yep. So what happens? If that happens, you'd find that retirement would be in the wings, wouldn't it?
Well, he's certainly old enough to retire.
I'm saying more from the sense of how long he's been in power, that you think he's going to go back to his office and simply represent Manhattan and his district? No, it's not going to happen.
No, I don't think so.
Not going to happen.
Mm.
Should we have any cheerful notes that we could bring to our listeners this morning?
How about
the next city clerk? How about the next city clerk? Who have we said said should be the next city clerk?
Well, we said a long time ago, we said that Vinny Spence was the only one with a 10-year red accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the job. So why are we wasting our time with politics and using that as a tool of extortion of the mayor? It's funny. It's all based on politics. It's all based on games. It's all based on both sides playing their game. At the end of the day, none of them have the BA public because they're embarrassed by their conduct. And that goes for the Democratic side and goes for the Republican side. Shame on all of them. Because it doesn't deserve this, and the public doesn't deserve it. Well, you know, remember I think I told you privately that there was somebody who was intending to marry a member of the Spano family who was let go because he didn't go to work. He had a job, he didn't go to work. The mayor found out about it, and the mayor rightfully dismissed him. And then I found out that the case went before the district attorney, who did absolutely nothing about it, and he was exonerated or just let loose. And then on top of all that, we find that he's been rehired back in the city. The same city that got rid of him not complying with the job requirements, which means go and do the job, he's back. Why? Tell me why. And tell me why it's hushed up. It was hushed up before. I knew about it out of deference. I said, fine, no problem. You got rid of him. I have to respect that. But you brought him back. What did you bring him back for? And does the public know that this is what they're paying for? It's not good.
I know. Are we? Do we have any answers to that?
I don't. Well, that's why you're on the show, because you do have answers. I don't have the answers. I just have questions. Well, certainly in government, people have no interest in answering questions. They're too tough because they know there are no answers.
Uh-huh.
You know what? If I were the administration and I thought the man deserved the job and that he made a mistake and that he learned from being kicked out the door by a future relative, and the bottom line is if I would bring him back, I would say he's learned his lesson. I've made him go through some sort of a class or school that he'll learn what his responsibilities are, and he's got to sign a piece of paper that if he veers off the mark of his responsibility to serve because he's getting paid by taxpayer money, he can kick himself out because he'll never ever see his face again in City Hall.
There should be a simple listing, transparent to the public, that says who in the highest levels of government, particularly with authority to hire, all at the cabinet level and so forth,
mm-hmm.
just list all the relatives, all
right.
the family. Now that doesn't mean they did. That doesn't mean they didn't come correctly, didn't gain it the right way, didn't earn it fairly, not
mm-hmm.
at all. It just means that we have a right to know, do we not?
Yes, we do. Well,
you know,
wasn't that one of the cases that the IG brought forward with Mr. Borelli and him engaging in the, in getting a relative who was a vendor for the city? So in reality, the vendor used was a relative, but that was the vendor that had been vetted out before and was approved for use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as the people involved in this whole issue, they're laughing about it because they don't care, because there is no bite, and it's a waste of time. And that's what I find demeaning, is that the administration has allowed an effective IG to be laughed at by the same people that she actually brought forward in a very, very quiet way. And they don't get it. And the point is that what are they going to do, play musical chairs? Mr. Meyer is going to be the one told to hire and not Mr. Borelli for a particular situation. I know it's going to be a phone tag game. And they know it too. But it doesn't cut it. And that's why people are offended by this whole process.
Well, that's what makes government difficult to deal with, because what you see is not what you get. And the more you have the personal and the political involved as opposed to the professional, the more murky it is, and no one steps on anybody's toes, and everything is on eggshells, and people keep things to themselves, because then there's retribution, then there's punishment, then
mm-hmm.
there's a price to pay. The price to pay, not for the right thing, but when you do the right thing, the unintended consequences, then you get isolated.
Yeah, that's so true.
There's just too much of it. That's just the point. There's just too much of it. And, you know, without the clarity of the lineup and knowing the scorecard and all the players, it's very difficult.
Well, that's the problem, and I don't think that there's an interest in doing that. You know, I guess I find it offensive that we're such a large city, but I guess we don't have the backup staff to do all that we need to do, and there are many issues. What are we doing with economic development? Did that fall off the side of the wagon? We were going gung-ho for quite a few months, maybe that we were moving ahead with something. What are we moving ahead with? One project? We've done the ribbon cutting already.
Yeah, we're putting, so it seems to be done? Putting up more tall apartment buildings.
Oh, well, that's nice. What are they, Section 8 housing just to make life perfect for the city? You know, Are we getting paid all the money for the loans? You know, a lot of it's just, we're swimming in money. We're swimming in money. The public is ripped off. There's no accountability, and I just don't quite see it. I really don't see it. I don't know what they're doing. Whatever happened to the SFC project? Why is it dormant? It's May. You know, June, July, August, September. We're 4 months from this make-believe end of the master development plan designation for SFC Yonkers, and this is the game. And since December, Peter Klein, who represents Fidelco, should have already presented his project to the city. The project was promised. The city expected it, and that should have been completed by February. It is now almost the end of May. March, April, May. 3 months late. Mind you, as far as I'm concerned, 12 years late. So what's going on? Why is everyone quiet? When are we going to move ahead? Are we going to be able to move ahead if no money's coming in? How far away are we from getting money from the Ridge Hill development? Haven't they cracked their nuts so we could start getting sales tax revenue? How come we don't have a financial report every quarter like we're supposed to? You know, those are the games that are being played. You know, let Mr. The majority bring in the quarterly report. Who's the person? Oh, you know, I know why we don't have it, because we have this rerun, you know, Mr. Chris Johnson, who's sitting there in the first district, but doesn't know how to add one and one and come up to two, and he's supposed to be the one to demand it, and he's not demanding it. He's supposed to be the economic czar on the city council. You know, how is anyone to function? I don't get it.
You know, at least we can ask some of the questions. We certainly don't have all of the answers, but at least we could raise the questions, questions that I'm sure on other people's minds as well.
Well, then what I find, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but what I find really difficult is that I know, for example, if you were in office, you wouldn't have all these issues and problems. There are other people who are competent, and they may not be Albert Einsteins, but we don't need Albert Einsteins in government. We don't need creativity. We need plodding, directed, focused individuals who have no problem in doing the people's work and would love it. And I don't understand. We certainly pay enough money. We're one of the highest paid cities in the country. We pay for it, and they're on the ante. You know, pretty soon we'll be giving $200,000 salaries to absolute idiots. I'm sorry, I'm not happy with the Department of Parks and Recreation. Who is this woman that came in? What is she doing? What about Paula Red Zeman, or whatever her goddamn name is? She keeps changing it so fast. And the point is, what have they done? What have they produced? They cost us more money than they're worth, and they create strife. What's the point? You know, I don't get it. Why do we have conflicts of interest from the people that we hire for office, even the directors? Conflicts of interest. Why are they getting rid of Mr. Giacono as a Republican on the Board of Education, Board of Trustees? Because it suits them, not because he was competent in the first place for that particular position. It was a political move. Why don't we stop this? And where are the Democrats to tell you that? Or where are the Republicans to tell you what the Democrats are doing? And how come they just watch each other screw around with the system? Because they want to do the same. And where's the Albany delegation? Oh, they're hiding out in Albany, is that it? With that riffraff up there? I'm sorry, I don't hear Shelley Mayer saying, you know, vociferously, I want this guy Lopez out the door. I don't see them call for Sheldon Silver's dismissal.
Exactly.
And I don't see Andrea Stewart Cousins, the leader of the Democratic, they're in a minority. So what about them? What about Mr. Klein from the Independent Democratic Committee? Mr. Gellos?
You know what? I have to give credit to this assemblyman from Buffalo who said, I need to form an independent group. I'm withdrawing from the Democrats in the assembly until Shelley Silver resigns his office. Now, there's a man who made a statement.
That's a very
Maybe others will follow. Maybe others will follow in the assembly. Who knows? It's a brave thing that he did.
I didn't read that, and I'm glad you mentioned it. That's really quite good. Oh, remember, I was really quite impressed by, what's his name, Dr. Assemblyman Katz, the one that had a problem. They found marijuana, and he was speeding on his way to Albany. And he comes up with a statement saying, oh, well, he thinks this should be done. Oh, quit it already. Get your own life together before you start throwing around barbs at other people. And point is, his comments are not credible because he hasn't taken care of his issue. Maybe he should have kicked the door, too, for that sort of thing. And yet he makes believe, oh, it didn't really matter. Well, you were speeding and you had marijuana. If you think it's okay to speed, then change the law. And if you think it's okay to have marijuana, then change that law too. It just doesn't make sense. It's all about them.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I used to think that for whatever reasons, people were into smoking pot in New York. And I expected that when they suggested that it shouldn't be illegal if you carried a certain amount, I guess that would have been okay by me because I thought that we were spending a tremendous amount of money incarcerating people. And I don't know what it would have led to if they were limited to that. I just don't know. But we're certainly wasting a lot of money on that issue as well. So I'm not really conflicted. I think in Holland they proved it could be done and it works out better because it's not criminal, so you can get rid of all those hucksters that are you know, messing around with the system, and all that money and all that illegality would come up front and be taxed as well.
Start a movement.
No, I'm not going to bother anymore. I don't want to refocus my energy on something like that. I certainly am not that passionate about it. I think that law enforcement should figure out what they need to do so, or know what to do for them. You know, with regard to drugs and, you know, stopping it from coming into the U.S. But it's hard to stop drugs when on Wall Street they're shooting up, snorting up, and coking up, and who knows what else they're doing. That's all the more reason, actually, to reduce their salaries so they can't afford it.
They'll always find a way.
I guess. That's a good thing. So I don't know, what is positive that you think about the city, Mr. Nayrog, other than it's a beautiful day?
It's a beautiful day in a beautiful city with beautiful people, and we just need to focus on those spots, if you will, those stains that need to be eradicated. And in places, certain things just need to be looked at more carefully and more closely. But we need to move forward. And we just need to continue to do the right thing and bring things to light. And hopefully the fresh air will help clear up some of this. It's nothing that can't be righted. It's actually getting the right people involved and the right people doing the right thing. It sounds so trite sometimes, but it's true. It's not easy. It's difficult, it's time-consuming, it's all-consuming when it comes to politics and government. But again, this is what rules our lives. So
why aren't people engaged? Don't they recognize that politics runs every aspect of their life?
Well, I know. They certainly do, and they kind of leave it to the people they elect, and they hope that they can do the job while everybody else is trying to earn a living, especially in these times. And I guess there's just been so much disgust out there, whether it's in Albany or in Washington or the rest of the world. It's all so negative. People are just trying to find a little bit of space in their own lives. And
what do you think about Washington D.C.? What's going on there with the I guess unapproved under the that were focused on, I think it wasn't done legally.
Well, I tell you, I'm with only a few minutes left before I sign off the air. I'd rather hold that to another show because there are things to be talked about there. There's numerous topics that we can go into.
All right.
And they won't go away, believe you me, by next week. So.
No, it's certainly not going to go away. It's going to be very interesting. I think we're at where we're losing rates. And I don't know if I don't know what to do about it. I think people have become so complacent that we're ready to lose them. So I'm worried.
Yeah.
You know, IRS and breaking into the Associated Press wires and stuff. There are many concerns.
I don't know what else it would take to wake up people, believe you me, and I think they are awakened. The fact of the matter is we just don't see it from the media unless it benefits the media, and the only thing that benefits the media right now is that the White House and its agencies went after the media. So that's why we're getting at least more coverage than would be usual on the issue, because mm-hmm. the gore of the media has been stuck.
That's true. Very true. That's a very, very good point you make. I didn't really think of that. But, yeah, they're under hurting, so they're crying out all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Media hasn't played fair either, so it's important. That's a really good discussion. Maybe we'll have that. I know you have to leave. You have an appointment. So that's all important. All right, so Mr. Nayrong, we'll have to hold off to another Tuesday.
Okay, and it was always a pleasure to be with you and our listeners. And again, we thank those who listen to us live and later by archive. And it's always a pleasure having a conversation about our great city of Yonkers. And I wish everybody a beautiful sunny day and a great week until we catch up on Westchester on the Level with Hezzy Harris and Rich Nayrong next Tuesday from 10 to 11.
All right. Well, you have a successful day, sir.
Thank you. Great. Take care now, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there we have it, Richard Nayrong, the one and only, the only person who can add a little extra cachet to whatever it is that we're talking about. So, in celebration of that, we're going to find out what's going on in the Westchester Broadway Theater. So let's listen about Guys and Dolls.
Luck be a lady tonight.
One of Broadway's most high-spirited musicals ever is on stage now at the Westchester Broadway Theater through June 9th. The Tony Award winner for Best Musical of the Year, Guys and Dolls. It's one of the liveliest, funniest, most colorful collection of Broadway characters you'll ever see. The larger-than-life world of Damon Runyon's New York City, where the gamblers, the showgirls, the coppers, and the missionary workers all collide with hilarious and unexpected results. And the wonderful sing-along score includes some of Broadway's most memorable hits, like A Bushel and a Peck, If I Were a Bell, Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat, and Luck Be a Lady. And remember, your tickets include a delicious served dinner before the show with a choice of 6 entrees, and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Don't miss this bold and brassy Broadway classic, Guys and Dolls. On stage now through June 9th, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back, so this is Westchester on the Level. What I'm going to do with you now is we approach the 11 o'clock hour, and had some difficulties with the Wi-Fi today for some crazy reason. And I think they're still fixing some of the outlets for the 4G network that I have here. And so whatever the case is, but it looks like we're getting some good speed here. So hopefully that will help. What I'm going to do is I'm going to first go over to Low HUD with you and see if there's anything that we missed, because there's certainly a lot more than I can cover in any given day. And so we'll see where maybe your focus and let's see. Well, I guess what it may be easier, because nothing is striking me from the front page. Well, the most important thing, of course, is their front page is, they said it was updated at 10:52 this morning about the Oklahoma tornado's wake. I thought they mentioned here the 24 are dead in Oklahoma by the tornado, the twister, but I don't remember it being only 24, and I thought it was much greater. I thought it was over 50. But whether it's 50 or 24, certainly the I guess it's just so tragic. I sometimes really wonder how people have the ability, literally, to continue their life by rebuilding their homes, and certainly doing so in light of the fact that that particular area is prone to twisters, tornadoes. There are certain areas that are prone to flooding that are absolutely outrageous in their power and nothing stand before it. I hear that this particular twister may have literally sat on this town outside Oklahoma City for 40 minutes, unabated. It must have been one of the most horrific storms ever in history. And so I just can't imagine, how difficult it must be to build and then rebuild, and how often can you do it. And I don't think it's a question of money. I think it's a question of your mental capacity to go on, you know, a resiliency that I can't imagine people would have. And reclaim their life off that particular land, do so because they love the community that they grew up in or that they've adopted. And so the will to continue is for oneself, family, also for the general community at large. It's a very hard thing to imagine, but to lose all your memories, the parents of your children, graduations, you know, other stuff, a gift here and a gift there, a simple clay tray of something that your child made for you or your wife. You know, these are very difficult things to bring back, actually impossible to bring back. So it amazes me, people's resiliency, and I'm in awe by it. So I wish them great strength, the ability to find the strength to continue. Well, I've gone into Lohud's Yonkers section, and the big issue, of course, is the redistricting debate that took place on Monday. It will continue tonight. I won't go there. Because of the latest 4 hours spent on Monday afternoon, caused me to delay the deal, and I just didn't have the ability to put the entire story together right away. I couldn't see it. There's so many nuances to it. So hopefully you've done a good job in relating as much information as possible, even though it was a long dissertation on what had happened. But there are so many complexities to it. So I think it's because so much that's been played out has been played in the back room. And so I think it's important for the public to be aware, should they care to be aware of it, or should they find the time to become aware of what's going on. So there were many issues, and that was covered. There'll be a meeting, a Rules Committee meeting tonight, where the two maps that were presented, one by the mayor and one by the Democratic, so you call it a Republican map, a Democratic map, and then there was one map that was supposedly a combination of the two. But I thought only two maps were thrown back into committee, so that's going to be looked into and discussed today at the conference room, the City Council conference room. But that will also take so many hours that it's just not, I don't have the time to catch up. I didn't finish writing up anything until 4 o'clock this morning, 4:30 actually. And so it's just too time consuming to give it any more time, certainly not this week, because I'm also constricted at the other end by what's happening with the newspaper. We have to print the paper sooner rather than later because of the printers have different days off, and so we need to print early, and things have to be completed. So I have no time for this continuing story. It'll be in the rules committee. It may conceivably come out of the rules committee, so that it will be again presented before the Yonkers City Council next week. One thing I'm not sure, I think I did mention when I was speaking with Mr. Narog, that if any of these maps are approved, they will come to naught because they cannot be approved 30 days prior to the first signature being gathered in the petition process. I think the petition process begins on the 3rd or the 4th or the 5th or the 6th of June. Whatever it is, we don't have 30 days before the 3rd, 4th, or 5th, or 6th of June. So therefore, this is a moot point. This is all histrionics, drama, very sweet. And in fact, so cute, actually. Mr. Larkin gave Mr. Lesnick a statuette calling him a great actor, and I guess he deserved it at the time based on its history, and so it was funny. It was just a good joke, so I appreciated that little moment of levity in the difficult evening, or rather afternoon into evening. So it was very interesting. So let's see what else they're talking about. Politics on Hudson. Isn't that sweet? I didn't read this, but this is from Politics on Hudson. Today's Tuesday, and evidently the Politics on Hudson article, which is falls under the LOHUD, is what is it? Where does it say this here? Let's see, here it is. Silver says, mistakes were made, I deeply regret them. Oh, God. So anyway, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver apologized Monday for his handling of the sexual harassment scandal involving one of the chamber's most senior members. That's Mr. Lopez from Brooklyn, a very good friend of Mr. Silver. So very, very interesting. But that's about it. We did mention on the air yesterday that Jenkins was joining the Bramson campaign for Mr. Bramson's effort to unseat the incumbent Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino. So it turns out Mr. Jenkins, the campaign effort to reach the top of the Democratic Party designation fell on Noam Bramson, and now Mr. Jenkins has become the co-chairman of Bramson's campaign. So, we'll see what that does. I'm not quite sure. It's going to be an extremely close race, I believe, but we'll see. We'll just see. We'll wait to see what else transpires. You know, certainly you can't judge quite often too far in advance, because it seems like a lifetime. 3 months in advance is a lifetime in Westchester politics. I think you can barely predict a week in advance in Yonkers. It's that difficult to do. Actually, though, when I reflect upon that statement, I realize we've done a very good job at it. Well, we got some interesting stuff in the future that we hope that you'll be able to share with us. And if you read YonkersTribune.com, so that'll be good. I'm going to now move over to Newsday and see what they have focused on. I'm sure that they focused on the redistricting map. That was the big issue of the day. Let's see. Oh, this is the explanation in the Journal News, and that is that the Oklahoma Medical Examiner has lowered the tornado death toll, and that's why the toll is less than the 50-something that we heard yesterday night. So several children have been pulled out of the rubble, alive, thank goodness, at the school. And so that's very, very encouraging. They've done such an unbelievable amount of work. Literally, the town is flattened out. This is a suburb of Oklahoma City. Very, very tragic, literally, extremely tragic. Wow. It's a community of about 41,000 people, 10 miles south of Oklahoma City. And for some reason or other, the suburb is bracing for another long, harrowing day. It seems that the area and the weather systems are such that they could create even more tornadoes, more twisters in the area. Very, very frightening scenario. Let's just see if there's anything else in the Westchester region that Newsday is focused on specifically. Let's see. Well, certainly that's the overriding story of the day, because the tragedy in the Oklahoma suburb. And let's see, anything else in here? Let me just look specifically into Westchester and see if there's anything here that grabs my attention. And bear with me a moment here. Let's see what else. Oh, the wake for the Hofstra shooting victim is taking place in Tarrytown. That's today. And I think that that's it. I don't believe that there's a more overriding situation, you know, that comes to the forefront. I don't think so. I just don't think so. Well, you know, so that's the story. We'll see exactly what goes on here. I guess the redistricting story is very important as well in Newsday, and they mentioned that Mr. Torero, the majority leader, sided with the GOP on Yonkers redistricting. It's all about Mr. Torero, and that's the fault of the Democratic Party, that they haven't brought him in to their sphere of influence. I don't know if that's good or bad. Future will tell us what's to transpire. Okay, so based on that, I think that what we could do, even though it's a little bit early, it's only Tuesday, what we could do is also engage in some international news, because there's so much happening there. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play for you what's happening at the Westchester Broadway Theater later on, June 3rd. It might be something you'd want to plan for, so listen in.
We watched Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Rick Nelson grow up on TV as the son of 1950s icons Ozzy and Harriet. We also watched him emerge from that show to become a teen idol sensation, whose string of great recordings included 3 number one Billboard hits. And now on Monday, June 3rd, the Westchester Broadway Theater lets you enjoy his memorable music all over again as they welcome back Rick Nelson Remembered, a live multimedia concert starring Rick's sons, the Nelson twins, Matthew and Gunnar Nelson. It's a unique musical tribute to their legendary father with great renditions of all of his biggest hits like Traveling Man, I'm Walkin', Hello Mary Lou, Garden Party, and so many more. Along with incredible big screen video footage of the Nelson family and their many celebrity friends. And before the show, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Come join the Nelson Twins and relive all their father's timeless classic hits with Rick Nelson Remembered. One night only, Monday, June 3rd at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back, and this is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Aris, your host. One of the most interesting things that's transpired of late is the accusation against the Apple computer firm for literally avoiding billions of dollars in taxes. So this is like a major, major issue, and it's coming, as you'll hear, forward to being scrutinized. So evidently, tech giant Apple avoids paying tax on billions of dollars of profits, said a report by the U.S. Senate on Monday. And Apple chief executive Tim Cook and others from the California company have been called on to testify at a hearing today. So Apple avoided paying taxes on tens of billions of dollars in profits through a complex network of subsidiaries, many with no declared tax jurisdiction, a U.S. Senate panel concluded. The Senate discussed at a hearing today stopped short of accusing the U.S. tech giant of anything illegal, but two lawmakers on the panel said the tax strategies call for new scrutiny. And this is one of the major issues that come to about, that as law is put into practice, scrutinizing the conduct of those who conform to the law or are outside of the law's intent need to be better scrutinized in order to see if the law has the wherewithal to withstand any, adherence by those that it should have oversight of. So this is going to be very, very important because we're going to learn if there's a problem with the laws that Apple could have, and if they will actually be corrected, or they're just going to get slapped with a fine and nothing's going to get done, or it's going to take forever to get it done. In the meantime, billions and billions of dollars will have been lost in tax revenue. So the Senate investigation was just that, stopped short of accusing the tech giant of anything illegal. And Apple was to tax offshore tax haven, said Senator Carl Levin, head of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations in a state. On Monday, Apple sought the holy grail of tax avoidance, he said. It has created offshore entities holding tens of billions of dollars while claiming to be tax resident nowhere. Levin said Tuesday's hearings would, quote, highlight that gimmick and other Apple offshore tax avoidance tactics so that American working families who pay their share of taxes understand how offshore tax loopholes raise their tax burden, adds to the federal deficit, and ought to be closed. Isn't that fascinating? Ought to be closed because the impertinence of this conduct is such that it has avoided paying taxes and therefore burdened the taxpayer. And I don't know much about it. He's right about this. It needs to be studied, and it needs to be closed. As he said, ought to be closed and shut so tight that anyone that would even consider doing anything like this would be fined very, very seriously. So Republican Senator John McCain, another panel member, cited, quote, the highly questionable tax strategies that corporations like Apple use to avoid paying taxes in America. And that is very, very crucial. At the end of the day, I'm sure we're going to find that the purpose of these strategies was set up by the United States thinkers, the think tanks in the United States to help abroad The bottom line is we can no longer allow this open sieve to just literally suck our ability to get those taxes back in the United States. So the proper place for the bulk of Apple's creative energy ought to go into its innovative products and services, not in its tax department, McCain said in a statement. The two senators said they were proposing measures to close these loopholes used by Apple and other multinationals to shield offshore income from U.S. taxes. The Senate report said Apple used a cost-sharing agreement to transfer intellectual property assets offshore and shift the resulting profits to tax haven jurisdictions. One subsidiary reported net income of $30 billion, but declined to declare any tax residence, filed no corporate income tax return, and paid no corporate income taxes to any national government for 5 years, the report said. The panel said Apple also negotiated a tax rate of less than 2% with the government of Ireland, lower than the 12% statutory rate, to use Ireland as the base for its network of offshore subsidiaries. This is mind-boggling, but so it's been permitted. And look how long it's taken government to figure this stuff out. 5 years at minimum they've been operating like this in Ireland, and yet look how long it's taken. Well, from 2009 to 2012, the deal allowed Apple to shift $74 billion in worldwide sales income away from the United States to Ireland, the investigators found. The report said Apple has $145 billion in cash and equivalents, of which $102 billion is held offshore to minimize tax liabilities. You know, this is fraud. So the panel asked Apple executive Tim Cook and others from the California tech giant to testify today on, quote, methods employed by multinational corporations to shift profits offshore. Hopefully they will also tell us why they do it besides the tax benefits. The hearing comes amid increased scrutiny on offshore holdings of big U.S. corporations, which have hundreds of billions of dollars overseas, but are reluctant to bring the funds home because they could be subject to a top tax rate of 35%. Cook told the Washington Post he will be making his own proposal to lawmakers, which he argued would make it easier for Apple and other companies to repatriate offshore profits. If you look at it today, to repatriate cash to the United States, you need to pay 35% of that cash, and that is a very high number, Cook told The Daily. So we are not proposing that it be zero. I know many of our peers believe that, but I don't view that, but I think it has to be reasonable. There have been talks about this for ages and ages. You've got to thank whomever brought this to light again, and that it will be considered, and it is literally on the list, which is so important. Well, let's look at what else is happening. This is really very, very interesting, and it has caused a ratchet up of much in the Middle East. Evidently, Syria and Israel have exchanged fire across the Golan Heights border. Israel military said today that gunfire from Syria had hit a patrol on the Golan Heights, prompting troops to fire back, while the Syrian army said it destroyed an Israeli vehicle it claims had crossed a ceasefire line. Now, Israel's army and Syrian forces exchanged fire across the sensitive ceasefire line on the Golan Heights on Tuesday, which is today, but the Jewish state denied one of its vehicles had been destroyed. Now, the Syrian army, quote, fired on an Israeli patrol, which we confirmed 6 hours ago, but did not destroy a vehicle or kill anyone, Israeli military spokesman Avichai Adrai wrote on Twitter. Now, Syria claimed to have destroyed an Israeli military vehicle it said had crossed the ceasefire line in the Golan Heights during the incident. And they say, quote, on Tuesday at 1:10 in the morning, that's 2100 Greenwich Mean Time, our armed forces destroyed an Israeli vehicle with everything it was carrying, which came from the occupied territory, said the Israeli army in a statement carried by, quote, the vehicle passed the ceasefire line and was moving towards the village of Bir Ajam, situated in the liberated Syrian zone of the Golan, it said, adding that the operation was at was aimed at lifting the morale of rebel forces in the region. Now, Israel earlier said it had responded to fire from inside Syria that hit a military patrol in the Golan Heights overnight, damaging a military vehicle. Overnight shots were fired at an Israel Defense Force, an IDF patrol on the border in the central Golan Heights, damaging a military vehicle, said a statement on the Army's website. No one was wounded, it added. In response, IDF forces returned precise fire at the source of the gunfire. They reported a direct hit, the statement added. Now, the IDF views the recent incidents in the north with concern and has lodged a complaint with UNDOF, the UN disengagement force responsible for patrolling that area. Andrei emphasized on his Twitter account that only light damage had been sustained from the Syrian fire. Early on Monday, the army reported that small arms fire from Syria hit the Israeli Golan overnight, causing no harm or damage. Was also filed a complaint with the UN force on that occasion. The Golan Heights have been tense since the beginning of the conflict in Syria, more than 2 years ago. However, there's been only minor flare-ups in the region to date, with Syrian shells crashing in the occupied Golan and Israel firing in retaliation. In recent weeks, there were four incidents of fire coming from Syria and straight across the ceasefire line. That's basically what's been going on. Now, the Israeli paper Haaretz, which is The Nation, claims that the Syrian army captured the Syrian army approved aid to the rebels. So the Syrian army yesterday displayed an Israeli-made jeep. It said was captured from a rebel organization during recent battles for control of Qusayr, a Syrian city near the Lebanese border, and Damascus claims the vehicle was proof of Israeli and U.S. aid to the Syrian opposition. Now, Israeli officials denied the claims of aiding the rebels. They said the jeep was the model with the Israel Defense Force years ago, and it is not clear how it reached the rebels. The Lebanese television station Al-Mayadeen, which has ties to Hezbollah, broadcast a video of Syrian army personnel next to the jeep, which showed bullet damage. Now, the vehicle is identifiable as a relatively old armored model of the Sufa jeep, which is manufactured in Israel under license from Chrysler. Now, such vehicles have been used by the IDF for decades in the territories and were used by Israeli forces in the South Lebanon buffer zone until Israel's withdrawal from Lebanon in 2000. The IDF license number 669491 is clearly visible in the clip, as are the maximum speed limits and other markings typical of IDF vehicles. Now, the Syrian army interviewed in the film said this was proof of Israeli aid to the Syrian army, one of the major opposition behind the armed rebellion against Assad. Now, Israel has avoided providing logistical or military aid to the Syrian army, Syrian rebels, and Israeli military sources told Haaretz it seems the jeep reached the rebels by chance, so they said. Now, a preliminary IDF investigation conducted after the vehicle's capture was reported showing the jeep was taken out of IDF service at least 10 years ago. It is thought that the jeep may have been left behind in Lebanon in 2000 or sold as army surplus. Now, the IDF spokesman's office confirmed that the model in the video has not been used by the IDF for more than 10 years, adding, quote, "This is another failed attempt of Syrian propaganda to direct false accusations against Israel." Well, so that's really very interesting to see what's going on. And then let's see what else is going on here. All right. Now, Haaretz, again, the Israeli paper, they also claim that Assad is helping Hezbollah target Israel, and that's what the media is saying. So listen in. Bear with me a moment. It's going to go on any minute. Okay, we just have to wait a moment for it to click in. There it goes. All right, it's loading up. Sorry. Okay, it's going to happen any second. Okay.
No official comments as of yet on this report actually put out there by the Iran Arab Daily Al Hayat. It's very difficult to confirm to me that the information that it gives that an anonymous Iranian source told it that Tehran has managed to convince the embattled Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to allow for Hezbollah, the Shiite militia, one of Israel's regional enemies, to open up a new front against Israel in the Golan Heights. Remember, that's where that common border is between Israel and Syria, and that is very much a scenario that Israel fears being dragged into the internal conflict inside Syria, especially if the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad uses third-party proxies, perhaps to heat that things up along that border. Has been this happened today. We have seen errant shells fired landing on the Israeli side, at times drawing fire from Israeli troops posted out there, who at times hit the source of fire today. However, the Israelis chose not to respond. But again, they're very concerned indeed that things could heat up very soon up there.
Very interesting. So we're going to also continue to list what's going on in Israel. Netanyahu tells Assad that Israel's sole interest is to bar weapons from reaching Hezbollah. And so that's the line that's being drawn by Netanyahu in order to explain the conduct and Israeli forces should they, you know, somehow become engaged. So the diplomatic security cabinet met in Jerusalem for more than 3 hours on Sunday afternoon to discuss tensions on the northern border in the wake of reported Israeli airstrikes in Syria. And according to two senior Israeli officials briefed on the outcome of the meeting, the main decision was to send as fast a message as possible to Syrian Assad in order to prevent further escalation in the north. Now, though Israel has been careful not to formally claim responsibility for the airstrikes, officials in Jerusalem were pleased by the international community's response. U.S. President Barack Obama stressed that Israel has the right to defend itself, as did British Foreign Secretary William Hague. Russia and China said nothing, and while even the condemnations in the Arab world were few and half-hearted, as part of its effort to send a pacifying message, Israel will continue to maintain official silence about two airstrikes reported in foreign media outlets. Over the past few days, a senior Israeli official said the goal is to make it clear to al-Assad that Israel's sole interest is in preventing advanced weaponry from reaching Hezbollah. It isn't interested in intervening in Syria's civil war, helping the top regime. Assad's meeting of the diplomatic security cabinet, which consisted mainly of briefings by the heads of the intelligence agencies and Israel Defense Forces, Chief of Staff Benny Gantz, was the second in 3 days. Previously, Thursday, not a few hours before the first reported airstrike. A few hours before the second reported airstrike on Saturday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu paid a secret visit to the headquarters of the IDF's Northern Command. And despite the weekend's tension, Netanyahu decided to depart for China as planned on Sunday. The fact that he did so indicates the intelligence community views the chances of either Syria or Hezbollah, and moreover, going ahead with a visit as part of Jerusalem's effort to send a pacifying message to Assad. Now, Netanyahu and his advisors concluded that canceling the visit at the last minute would be interpreted by Syria and Hezbollah as a sign of Israeli intentions to escalate the situation. The prime minister also wanted to avoid sparking a crisis with Beijing after he had already offended the Chinese leadership by canceling a visit at the last minute in November of 2010. Since the diplomatic security cabinet meeting did cause Netanyahu to delay his flight by almost 3 hours. Now, in a conversation with the reporters accompanying him to China after boarding the plane, Netanyahu declined to comment on the situation in Syria, focusing instead on the importance of his state visit to China. "I know that what you want, but I'm barred from talking about it," he said. "In any case, never considered canceling." Netanyahu will return to Israel on Friday. In his absence, Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon will serve as acting prime minister. Netanyahu will receive regular updates on the security situation while in China and also in the air. But if an escalation occurs requiring the convening of the diplomatic security cabinet in order to make decisions, it would take him many hours to return to Israel. Now, the prime minister has had bad luck with previous trips abroad at moments of high security tension. In May 2010, for instance, he was in Canada during the Navy's botched interception of a Turkish-sponsored flotilla in Gaza, and he and his aides had thought the chances of the raid turned into a diplomatic crisis were low and therefore decided against canceling the visit, but in fact it turned into a major crisis. And hopefully current assessments of the likelihood of escalation in the north aren't similarly flawed, but if they are, Netanyahu is liable to find himself flying back to Israel midweek instead of having a comfortable chat with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Whoa, God, this is like really, really unbelievable stuff, don't you think? Okay, let's see what else is really happening. We'll see if there are other situations in the middle going to impact us. With the show and specific to what's going on in the East, literally maintaining enough focus on what's happening here, and it's just very important. It just is what it is. What can I tell you? So those are the issues. Those are the issues around there. Let me just see if there's anything else. Right. You know, that situation in which there was a Syrian Free Army rebel known as Abu Sakkar carving out the heart of a dead soldier and putting it into his mouth has shocked journalists who met him in Homs in 2011 and 2012 and sparked widespread condemnation. It was just too much. And this is interesting. At the heart of the Free Syrian Army, which was aired on a French TV station last year, Amara, she's the news reporter, says that Abu Sakkar features in the second part of the 2.5-hour documentary. So just very, very interesting. You can find this by simply going to France24.com, and you'll be able to look that up under Middle East issues. So I think that'll be really important if you want to look into that. Now, this is really quite interesting, more closer to home and of great importance. It seems that the Guatemalan court has overturned the genocide conviction regarding the former dictator Efrain Rios Montt, who was convicted of genocide in the country's top court on Monday. The 86-year-old was convicted earlier this month for his role in massacres of Mayans, including Guatemala's 36-year civil war. Now, Guatemala's top court has thrown another curve into the genocide case of former dictator Efrain Rios Montt, overturning his conviction and ordering that the trial be taken back to the middle of the proceedings. The ruling late Monday threw into disarray a process that had been hailed as historic for delivering the first guilty verdict for genocide against a former Latin American leader. Constitutional Court Secretary Martin Guzman said the trial needs to go back for its good on April 19 to solve several appeal issues. The ruling came 10 days after a three-judge panel convicted the 86-year-old Rios Montt of genocide and crimes against humanity for his role in massacres of Mayans during Guatemala's bloody 36-year civil war. The panel found, after 2 months of testimony, that Rios Montt knew about the slaughter of at least 1,771 Ixil Mayans. That's, I guess they're designated as IXIL Mayans. I don't know. There must be like an ethnic group within the Mayan community in the Western Highlands and didn't stop it. Now, the tribunal sentenced the 86-year-old former general to 80 years in prison, drawing cheers from many Guatemalans. It was the first time a former Latin American leader was convicted of such crimes in its home country and the first official acknowledgement that genocide occurred during the war, something the current president, retired General Otto Perez Molina, has denied. Rios Montt's lawyers immediately filed an appeal, and he spent 3 days in prison before he was moved to a military hospital where he remains. Now, the top court on Monday said it threw out his conviction because the trial should have been stopped while he was resolved. Now, defense lawyer Francisco Garcia Gudiel told the Associated Press by telephone that he would seek the former dictator's freedom on Tuesday. Now, so that's today. There is no alternative, Garcia said. The court has made a legal resolution after many flaws in the process. Tomorrow we ask that they liberate the general who is being imprisoned unjustly. Now, representatives of the victims who testified against Rios Montt couldn't be immediately reached for comment, and the proceedings, which started in March, had been whipped back and forth ever since April 18, when a Guatemalan judge ordered that the trial should be restarted just as it was nearing closing arguments. Now, Judge Carol Patricia Flores had been recently reinstated by the Constitutional Court after being recused in February of 2012. She ruled that all actions taken in the case since she was first asked to step down were null, sending the trial back to square one. Now, the next day, April 19, the tribunal, hearing the oral part of the trial, asked the Constitutional Court to decide if the proceedings should continue. The trial was suspended for 12 days amid appeals and at times appeared headed for annulment. It resumed April 30. At 8:10, the three-judge tribunal found Rios Montt guilty after more than 100 witnesses and experts testified about mass rapes and the killings of women and children and other atrocities committed by government troops. Rios Montt ruled Guatemala in 1982 to 1983 following a military coup. Survivors and relatives of victims had sought for 30 years to bring punishment for Rios Montt. National Service Guatemala on both sides of the war has The trial was seen as a turning point in a nation still wrestling with the trauma of a conflict that killed some 200,000 people. When you think about 200,000 people, that is as if you would literally kill all people in the city of Yonkers, because our population is just shy of, I think, by 1,000 of 200,000 people. Can you imagine? Defense conflict miscarriage of justice. Courts solved more than 100 complaints and injunctions filed by the defense before the trial even started. And Rios Montt's defense team walked out on April 18, arguing that they couldn't continue to be part of such a bad proceeding. When the three-judge tribunal resumed the trial, it ordered two public defenders to represent Rios Montt and his co-defendant, Jose Rodriguez Sanchez. Now, Rios Montt rejected his public defender and instead brought in Garcia, who was expelled earlier by the tribunal but reinstated by appeals court. Garcia had earlier been ordered off the case after he called for the three judges on the tribunal to be removed from the proceedings. He kept trying to have the judges dismissed, and the Constitutional Court ruled that the trial should have been heard. The trial was unlawfully reopened, Garcia said, at that time. So this is an ongoing crisis right just south of the border for us, and it is a monumental change for Guatemala should it come to hold. So let's find out what else is going on. Last chance if you want to catch the Belmonts tonight at the Westchester Broadway Theater. Listen in.
Hey, doo-wop lovers, mark this down on your calendar. On Tuesday night, May 21st, the Westchester Broadway Theater presents an incredible night of doo-wop music with one of the original groups that started it all back in the late 50s, the doo-wop Hall of Famers, the Belmonts. An amazing night where you can enjoy some of the greatest doo-wop music ever recorded by the group that put Belmont Avenue in the Bronx on the American music map. You'll relive all the Belmont's biggest hits like Run Around Sue, Tell Me Why, A Teenager in Love, In the Still of the Night, and so many more. The timeless classics that put these Bronx legends into the Doo-Wop Hall of Fame. And don't forget, before the show, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees, all for one low price, and the parking is free. Order your tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Be there to enjoy the smooth harmonies and unforgettable hits of the Doo-Wop Hall of Famers, the Belmonts, Tuesday, May 21st at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, this is very interesting, too. It's about Argentina's dirty war junta leader who died at 87.
September 2nd, 2010, Jorge Rafael Videla is sentenced to jail for crimes against humanity. Vindication for these women, they all lost a loved one under Videla's rule. In 2012, the former dictator was again in the dock, this time handed a 50-year sentence for the theft of babies born to political opponents when they were held in secret jails. In 1976, General Videla became Argentina's president, first leader of the military junta, after a coup d'etat. The darkest hours of the dirty war were under his rule, as the military regime cracked down on its opponents, what it called subversives. Unionists, students, journalists, and priests, making up the estimated 30,000 who disappeared between 1976 and 1978. Videla first faced justice and his first life sentence for crimes against humanity 4 years after stepping down in 1981, found guilty of 66 murders, as well as hundreds of kidnappings and cases of torture. But after just 5 years behind bars, he was freed in 1990, thanks to a presidential pardon. He stayed free for 20 more years. Although he died in jail, Videla remained unrepentant to the end, calling himself a political prisoner.
Very interesting. It's a part of the history that people in America are just unfamiliar with, but certainly all of South America is gripped by these sort of atrocities that occurred and claimed to have been all legal, which is very, very interesting. All right, well, we've learned a great deal of what's happening there. Let's look at some other publications around the world to see what else is important. Wow. This is really quite interesting. I was looking up at Der Spiegel and Leipzig, which used to be in East Germany. And actually, my uncle on my mother's sister's husband was originally from Leipzig. And, you know, the Der Spiegel, which means the mirror, writes, calling all hipsters, Leipzig is the new Berlin. And Berlin used to be Germany's hippest city, but the once scruffy capital has long since succumbed to gentrification. The latest city to attract the creative class is the former East German industrial seat of Leipzig. Moving in by the thousands, they are lured by the euphoric buzz of cheap rent and youthful ingenuity. This is an article by Maximilian Pulp. Once again as a glowing red orb. People stream from turn-of-the-century villas and communist-era concrete apartment complexes and rush to the park. Adventurers and hedonists, painters, students, punks, and internet entrepreneurs come alone and in groups on bicycles and skateboards with guitars and cases of beer tucked under their arms. For months now, the residents of Leipzig have been celebrating every evening on the Sachsenbrücke or Saxony Bridge in Clara Zetkin Park. The parties began after the snow melted, continued throughout the summer, and show no signs of abating now that the days are growing shorter and the nights are getting colder. An entertainer swallows fire, a street musician sings a song by Leonard Cohen, and couples smooch on the edge of the canal. People are talking, laughing, and dancing on the bridge. Leipzig languished for a long time. It was a city in the heart of Eastern Germany, but barely on anyone's radar. It called itself the city of the peaceful revolution. After all, this is where people first took to the streets in the weekly Monday demonstrations to protest the communist regime of former East Germany. That was back in 1989, but Leipzig didn't experience its transformation until later. The change was heralded by the success of and other painters of the new Leipzig school. And every 2 or 3 years, Leipzig then showed a sign of life to the outside world. The airport was expanded and the city made a bid to host the Olympic Games. In the meantime, a hint of euphoria has seized the city. According to City Hall, the population grew by 9,000 last year. With 533,000 people now living in Leipzig, the city finally has as many inhabitants as it did before the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, and it has become a magnet for young, creative individuals. A few hundred meters from the Clara Zetkin Park in the Plagwitz district, artist Julian Zippel, 31, is walking across Karl-Heine-Straße, a wide boulevard bordered by Art Nouveau buildings and derelict industrial sites. He points to the galleries, bars, and theaters that have emerged here over the past few years. It all started here in Plagwitz, he says. Zippel has a 3-day beard and carefully disheveled hair. He studied art in Frankfurt and urban planning in Hamburg. 1 year ago, he came with a group of artists from Hamburg to exhibit some of his installations in Leipzig, and Zippel recalls how he restlessly roamed through Plagwitz at took him along to parties and warehouses. The city was ramshackle and wild. In Hamburg, artists were struggling for every square meter of space. In Leipzig, Zippel and his colleagues found limitless space available to them at the time. Says Zippel, he couldn't get the thought of moving to Leipzig out of his head. And Zippel walks up to an old factory. The walls are sprayed with graffiti. Windows are broken and steel girders crisscross the building. Before the fall of the wall, Zippel explains, the Westwerk was used to manufacture faucets and fixtures. Today, the space is used by artists and musicians. Painters are leaning over sketches in the studio, and music is booming from one of the old production halls. A woman with dreadlocks is hauling clothing into a vintage store in another city. In any other city, investors would have bought the building a long time ago, said Zippel. 3 months after his first exhibition in Leipzig, he gave notice for his apartment in Hamburg and moved with fellow artist Andy Willmann to Eastern Germany. Together, they have rented a store near the Westwerk that they use as a living space and studio. And in another former industrial building, Zippel and some friends organized an exhibition of abstract art by young painters from Leipzig. And for the opening, he nailed together wooden boards to make art. A friend is born in Leipzig, expects to be a major commercial success, he says. So the artists help each other out. What an interesting change of events for Leipzig. Very, very fascinating. I know our writer, Barbara Barton Sloan, last year went to Leipzig and was also enthralled by the city. There was an energy then that was palpable. So very, very interesting. And if you have an opportunity to look up Barbara Barton Sloan, Barbara Barton Sloan, S-L-O-A-N-E, and maybe comma, and then put in the Westchester Guardian, and through Google, Yahoo, whatever, you should be able to AOL search, you should be able to get that. So hopefully you'll find it an exciting read as I did. I've never been to Leipzig, so I was surprised by its verve and its joie de vivre. You know, it's Leipzig, I understood, was always on the cutting edge. It was a formidable city, and evidently it's coming to life again so many years after the fall of the war, and certainly was like a major city at the time when Germany was between East Germany. So fascinating place, a resurgence of a city. So it's exciting to see resurgence there. Who knows? There might be lessons to be learned from Leipzig that we can translate into the city of Yonkers. Hey, that's what it's all about, learning how to translate things of value that work in other places that might be able to be translated and become palatable and conceivable as a prospect for the city of Yonkers that also needs and searches for resolution to many issues that that repress it. And we're looking for ways to embellish it because there is so much going on here. Just as Leipzig had location, so does Yonkers. Sophistication. There is, well, quite often overlooked, but there is a large young population that's growing up in Yonkers, and I have hope that they will be able to inherit much of the places in government and in other places so that they could function and work here, and that would be a wonderful, wonderful outcome. And that should be part of our vision for the city, to be able to employ our own progeny in work to engage them and afford them an opportunity for a living and living wage and just success and something where they find comfort in the remuneration that they get and the challenges of meeting the needs of the city, and hopefully that'll come about. I'm still waiting for resolution with regard to Reverend Dr. Bostic, Jim Bostic. He still hasn't paid his entire crew. He's hiding behind silence. It's unfortunate the other media don't have the interest or the concern or the wherewithal to bring this out, but this is an absolute disaster, and it's as if the people here for the benefit of the community are being stiffed, and it hurts at a time when they expect their checks to be paid, but it's not. And shame on all of us for this not coming to light in a better way, and shame on all of us for not mitigating these concerns. There are many people who are employed there, and it's literally embarrassing to think that this man has gotten away with murder for so many years. He pulls this bullshit every year. Every year we go through this scene and nobody says a word. Well, you've heard it here first, and you've heard it here many times before, and you've read about it. So hopefully one day we will be able to tell you that things have changed for the better, and that something will be done to make corrections to all these issues and concerns. Tomorrow is Wednesday. I am so excited. We're going to speak to the manager, the general manager of Orvis in Ridge Hill, and David Tremsky. He's the general manager of Orvis in the Ridge Hill, and I think you'll find it very fascinating. So tune in tomorrow for him. I think you'll love it, and especially the promotion that Orvis has with regard to fly fishing. It's going to be terrific. Tune in tomorrow and stay safe. Bye.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.